Dueling attack ads increase the rancor in the Jacksonville mayor's race. A new study shows just how dangerous this city is for pedestrians. And a new name could soon be placed on Veterans Memorial Arena. Good morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. Thanks for being with us. I'm Melissa Ross. And just ahead, all of the biggest stories of the week with our Friday Media Roundtable. Already getting your calls? Join us. 549-2937. Then later, we'll tell you how a local mom's painting of a bird, just a painting of a bird, became a viral worldwide sensation. That's later. All of that ahead. But first, it's Friday, and here to discuss a busy week in the local news, we welcome Mark Woods with the Florida Times Union. Hey, Mark.
Good morning.
John Bachman is here, anchor with Action News Jax. Hi, John.
Good morning.
Freelance journalist Claire Goforth back again.
Good morning.
And Shelton Hull of Folio Weekly.
Good morning.
Good to have you all here, guys, and lots to discuss this week, everything from a new study confirming what we already knew. Jacksonville remains a very dangerous place for pedestrians. Also, we could soon be going to shows at ViStar Veterans Memorial Arena. We'll tell you about new naming rights for the arena later on. All of that ahead, but our top story this Friday, dueling attack ads have increased the rancor in the Jacksonville mayor's race. This week, City Councilwoman Anna Brochet released her first attack ad against incumbent Mayor Lenny Curry. Now, Curry has already been attacking Brochet on TV and with mailers going to people's homes. In the new spot, you hear gunfire and children crying. As statistics about the city's crime rates appear on the screen, and the finger is pointed at Mayor Curry for being responsible. At the same time, Anna Brochet, a Republican, is courting the city's Democratic vote. She met the other night with the Jax Young Dems, just as the city's most high-profile Democrat, Councilman and former Mayor Tommy Hazzouri, has appeared in a television spot for Lenny Curry. So lots to discuss as we kick off the hour with a look at where things stand in the city's mayor's race with 1 month to go until voters cast their ballots. Give us a call. It's 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to First Coast Connect at WJCT.org, tweets to at Melissa in Jax. And let's begin with you, Shelton Hull. We've got two Republicans, Curry and Brochet, the obvious frontrunners in this six-way mayor's race. In this new spot, you hear constant gunfire, crying babies, and a series of quotes from local media outlets about the city's crime rate. Brochet not pulling any punches as she goes after the mayor on his record on public safety. His campaign called the ad exploitative and a new low in local politics.
Well, how low can you go? We shall see. These ads, you know, Curry and Brochet have come out of the box, I think, with two of the worst political ads I've ever seen anywhere. I don't know if they want people to vote or if they want people to not vote or if they want people to move to a different city and vote for someone else. But neither side is doing themselves a lot of favors.
And why do you think they're two of the worst ads?
I think because neither ad really addresses the selling points for these individual candidates. Now, a cynic would say that it's because they have no selling points and you just talk about the negatives of your opponent rather than how nice you are. You know, if I were Brochet, I would be riding around in the hood on a horse, giving some bread to children, something like that.
But okay.
But the gunshots and the crying children, it has a triggering effect for some people in the community who have actually had to deal with things like this. And I think it kind of really reinforces the fact that neither Curry nor Brochet have much of a handle on this crime problem at all, which is part of because they've both been in key positions in local government as this has happened.
That's true, although you're right. The mayor certainly could be seen as having more responsibility, although Brochet has served on the city council during the last several years. We fact-checked this latest ad at our website, WJCTnews.org. The strongest claim made in the ad, John Bachman, is that Jacksonville led Florida in mass shootings in 2018. Gun Violence Archives defines a mass shooting as a gun-related incident where four or more people are shot and killed. Using that data, our partner News for Jax reported, yes, we did lead the state in 2018 with five mass shootings, although technically we are tied with Miami. But as we kind of go through the particulars of our crime issue in this city, certainly this is the defining issue in this contest. Incumbent Mayor Lenny Curry ran on this issue, ousted Alvin Brown 4 years ago over this issue. Crime rates have ticked up slightly under his tenure. And so he's now being challenged in the same way he challenged a prior incumbent. I guess the question is this going to be a defining issue for voters? And will these ads move the needle one way or the other?
Well, there's no doubt it's the defining issue for voters. I think you'd have a hard time finding something that rises even close to that. You know, I can say that the ads are effective. They most certainly are. You know, Broche said just last night, I believe, to us on Action News Jax that they are jarring for a reason. And of course, they are. Look. Attack ads are not fun for anybody as far as the public is concerned, but there's a reason politicians run them every election, because they are effective. To the issue at hand, you know, both Broche and Curry, as mentioned, have been a part of city government over this for the last several years, mm-hmm. a couple of years at least. And what I would say, and what I think some of the folks in office would say right now is, there are no simple solutions. You can't just flip a switch and violence in our city stops. So you have to do things, and you have to be somewhat patient with what you're doing to see in a year or two or three. The real question is, well, when do we stop and look back and go, okay, now things really just aren't working? You know, you don't know really. The old adage, "Time will tell." That's right. Unfortunately where we're at.
Right. And Mark Woods, Claire Goforth, Broche is saying she would take a different approach to crime prevention than the mayor, who's focused heavily on the policing aspect of this. She's saying, let's invest more in neighborhoods, invest more in prevention and intervention programs. We do have the Kids Hope Alliance, which has replaced the Jacksonville Children's Commission. Looking at that, we do have a new task force on crime reduction in this city. For those of us here who've covered this issue for a long time, as a big program looking at prevention and intervention, the Jacksonville Journey, which got defunded in the wake of the financial crash. And so, you know, when you look at their two platforms on public safety, how do they compare? Because this, as John just said, this is what voters will weigh more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's a huge issue for the voters of Jacksonville. I think Broche is focusing more on lifting people up, whereas Curry's strategy is more like pushing people down in terms of policing. I think that her ad is extremely effective, particularly for someone who has fewer resources going into this election. I mean, Curry has been pouring money into this campaign from the word go as soon as she said she was running for mayor officially, and mailers have been going out. His ads are playing all the time. So if she's going to make a big splash, she's really going to have to galvanize the voters that are on the fence. And honestly, I think most of us would agree that there's really no question that Curry has alienated Democrats and progressives on a host of issues, from climate change to, you know, civil rights issues. And Broche, on the other hand, has actually taken a strong stance on a lot of social justice issues. So it seems to me like she's kind of running two campaigns right now. There's one that's the negative, the ugly, the trying to get the Republican voters who may not really know who they want to vote for. And then there's the quiet outreach to the Democrats to try to get them to the polls for her, because that's really going to be the strategy she needs to win.
And let's talk about that. Mark Woods, Broche met the other night with the Jax Young Dems. This has been an interesting race to cover, as we see a Republican council person really courting the Democratic vote in this city right now. There's no Democrat running for mayor. So on the one hand, we see Broche courting the Democratic and progressive vote. On the other hand, Curry has Tommy Hazzouri, the former mayor, former school board member. He's the guy who got the most votes of anyone on the ballot 4 years ago when he ran for city council. He's the city's biggest Democrat, right? Curry's appearing in ads with Hazzouri. So that kind of shows you how the party label isn't really as defining an issue in our local races as it is in other races.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there.
Yes, we have lots of time to talk about it, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's no secret that I think her only path to victory would be to tap into what Andrew Gillum did here and And then you have these interesting dynamics. It always seems like in the mayoral elections, we have these kind of strange bedfellows. And that's kind of a prime example, what you pointed out. Going back to the ad, I would say, I think it is probably, you know, the Curry campaign says it's, you know, unfair to blame him for this. And this ad plays on people's emotions. And I would agree with that. But it's a little hard to have sympathy for that campaign when, I mean, you go back 4 years ago and there were flyers going out with a sinister looking Alvin Brown and basically blaming him for rape and murder in Jacksonville.
Yeah. And those flyers not only tied Brown to the statistics, they intentionally darkened his skin. And the Curry campaign took a lot of criticism for that.
Right.
They made Alvin Brown look even darker in the ads than he actually is in real life. There was a lot of criticism about the race-baiting element of those flyers.
Right. And then you may remember there was a debate where Lenny Curry pulled out a flyer that the Alvin Brown campaign had sent out of his pocket and held it up and said, "Do you think I'm a racist?" So it almost feels like the kid who's picking on somebody in the schoolyard again and again and again, and then somebody throws a punch at him and goes, "Hey, that's unfair." You know, it's hard. I don't necessarily think the Anna Brochet ad is fair or good. I mean, I agree with Shelton. Are they trying to make people not want to vote? But it's hard to feel sympathy with that campaign to say this. You know, this is a new low when they've dragged things down pretty low.
They're known
in the
for
past.
Lows. Yes. Here's a tweet from Lisa. "Doesn't the panel find any hypocrisy with the Curry campaign complaining about negative ads?"
Well, sure. It's one could say it's hypocritical, but it's also part of the strategy. You know, it was a race to the bottom, as Mark said, 4 years ago against Alvin Brown, and now it's live by the sword, die by the sword. Brochet, you know, Curry has this big financial advantage, so and he's the incumbent. We've only had three incumbents lose in the last 55 years or so. But one advantage Brochet has is that, number one, there are more registered Democrats in this city, and there are a lot of Republicans who, in private anyway, are a little bit discouraged with Curry. That's why Curry reached out to Tommy Hazzouri and this morning Al Lawson to kind of shore up that
Democratic congressman. Mm-hmm. Can those endorsements be effective for Lenny Curry?
Oh, absolutely. I think so. I mean, look, you know, a lot of people in our city don't pay as close attention to this as everybody in this room or, you know, the folks tied closely to both campaigns. So, you know, when somebody at home who follows this once every couple of weeks hears a big name like that and goes, "Oh, okay, if you're a Democrat, you that would definitely be an important aspect," I think.
Okay, let's go to your calls. As we talk about the mayor's race here on our Friday Media Roundtable, 549-2937. Tom is on the west side. Hi, Tom. Good morning.
Good morning to you all, too. I just wanted to say I agree with what I've heard so far from the panel. I would much rather hear the candidates say what they are for rather than what they're against. I mean, actually, Mayor Brown's negativity started even before Brochet had entered the race. And I think
you mean Mayor Curry, right?
Mayor Curry, yes, ma'am. Sorry about that.
That's okay.
In addition to that, I think she would be better off letting people know who she is and what she represents, because I don't know if people know enough about her at this point to make a change from Mayor Curry.
That's how she's got to make the sale. You're right, Tom.
I think that's a great point, Melissa, because I think one thing, you know, we are running out of time. I mean, there's not a lot of time left for someone who doesn't have the obvious track record, at least, to lay out exactly what is going to be done and how that's going to be different than what we've already been doing.
When you look at her campaign website, which I just pulled up, what the narrative she's trying to build is obviously that she can do a better job on public safety, but that she will end cronyism and bullying at City Hall, which those are accusations that have dogged this mayoral administration, and that she will also encourage a more inclusive Jacksonville, one that a leadership team that's more representative of the city as a whole. The Curry team has been accused of being heavy on white guys, no offense to the white men here on this panel, but that it's almost a frat house atmosphere at City Hall is the charge she's making.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of a movement that we're seeing nationwide where people are really ready for more of a representative in government, people that look like Americans, not just white male Americans, but Americans generally. I think that the bullying is a good good thing for her to bring up and hit hard because there's a lot of stories out there and there's a lot of credibility to that argument. It will be interesting to see how she fleshes out more of the details of her campaign.
Will the average voter care? As John said.
I mean, is it just about a battle of images, maybe?
I think, you know, yeah, I don't know. I really don't know if they're going to, but I do think that it would be nice for folks to have something to look at and say, okay, this is where it really is different.
Yeah. Peter at the beaches. Hi, Peter. Good morning.
Yes, hi. I would like the panel to comment on the state of democracy in Jacksonville, where the race to the bottom seems to work every time. The anti-Anna Brochet ad started even before she announced her candidacy, and no one is talking about where the 200 extra police officers have been assigned. Have they been assigned to the crime-ridden areas, or are they hanging around outside Queens Harbor and Deerwood?
Thanks, Peter. Not only have extra officers have been assigned, but also Mark Woods, JSO, has basically instituted an unlimited overtime budget for police right up until the day before the election. As Peter pointed out, though, where are they being deployed? And he's right in that, unfortunately, we've seen this in election cycle after election cycle in Jacksonville. These kinds of tactics, unfortunately, work.
Yeah, it seems pretty unprecedented, this idea that just basically unlimited overtime up until right before the election. And then I think the argument was, well, we don't want to do this during the election, but will it continue after that? If not, it feels, you know, what do they call it? Operation Safe and Sound or something? But, people have said it's Operation Re-Election. It does feel that way. I mean, it doesn't take much cynicism to look at it that way. And then, you know, now we all of a sudden we have a task force on resiliency, a task force on, on crime. And, you know, somebody said maybe we should have, election every couple months, which sounds like hell, but we all of a sudden, we have all these things happening right before an election that weren't happening 6 months ago.
Shelton. Yeah.
Get things done.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure that a lot of these cops are going to be deployed just to keep Curry and Brochet away from each other's throats. You know, voters 4 years ago elected Lenny Curry, and what I think a lot of people wanted from him, they wanted him to be like that sweet brown curry that you can feed to like every member of your family. But now you're getting more of the spicy red curry that's just so hot you can't even digest it. And Anna Brochet is trying to come along and be like,
I'm surprised no one's come up with some swag like that.
Shelton's got the next campaign ad.
Okay. She wants to be the mango lassi that cools down the heat, you know, but without watering it down.
Okay, another tweet from Madeline. It seems to me there's something blithely Trumpian about Curry's behaviors. As a voter, I find that off-putting and kind of gross. For Anna Brochet, you haven't heard her say a single word about Donald Trump really in this campaign. As she tries to build Democratic vote support, one way she could do that is by pointing out that Lenny Curry has tied himself closely to the president. But at the same time, she's got to get a lot of Republican votes who like Donald Trump and strongly approve of him. So you have not heard Donald Trump come up in this campaign.
Yeah, I mean, those are some high turnout voters who like Donald Trump, as his election is evidence of. So I think that it would be probably a foolish strategy of her if she started bringing Donald Trump into it. Sure, it would make Democrats angry, but is it going to make them angry enough to go to the polls when we already feel as though with her leadership on Confederate monuments and her unwillingness to back down on the JEA issue and various other things? I mean, she voted for HRO.
On privatizing JEA.
She voted for HRO. Curry didn't sign that legislation. I mean, there's a lot of issues that she can use that are positive that will get the Democrats to the votes. And if she brings Trump into that negative is going to hurt her with Republicans.
Let's take one more call on the mayor's race, then we'll move on. Renee on the west side. Hi, Renee. Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I had two things. I wanted to ask you guys, one, like, why you're talking about the mayor's race, like there are only two candidates. There are other candidates on the ballot. And also, I wanted you guys to maybe explore, what do you think about the fact that sample ballots haven't been sent out? I mean, people need time to do research. I know that may not be common, but there are some people, right? So they should have been sent out already. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, that's a good point. They do need, they typically go out a few weeks before an election. So they, you're right, Renee, they need to be getting out pretty soon. And if, by the way, if you go to the website DuvalElections.com and search filed candidates, you can look at all of the people running for mayor. You know, there are about six qualified candidates. There's Omega Allen. There is the mayor himself. There's Lenny Curry. There's a write-in candidate named Brian Griffin. Another candidate named Jimmy Hill, another Republican. And there's a whole list of names, but we've kept the discussion to Curry and Brochet because they're the obvious front runners here. So, but I would encourage everyone to go to that website, learn more a little bit there at DuvalElections.com. And if you're just tuning in, it's our Friday Media Roundtable. As we move on and talk about some other headlines from the week, give us a call at 549-2937. Now, also this week, TU columnist Mark Woods is known for his journeys around Jacksonville on foot. The hashtag MarkWalksJax is a popular social media meme as Mark posts stories, photos of his expeditions walking across Duval County. He managed to roll in here this morning in one piece, which is good because your latest piece, Mark, points out how dangerous this city is for pedestrians. At the same time, a new ranking came out from the group Dangerous by Design and again listed Jacksonville as one of the worst cities, one of the most dangerous cities in America for walkers. Pretty upsetting for someone who walks a lot, like yourself.
Right. Yeah, I think the premise of this, you know, kind of series and project was that we, you know, after consolidation, we are the largest city in the contiguous United States, and we also are one of the most dangerous for pedestrians. So I decided I'll walk across the city, you know, a few miles each Wednesday, and I did this a couple of years ago, north to south, and this year I'm doing it west to east. And you know, I think the main purpose for me is just to kind of see the city in a way I haven't seen it before. Even when you're in neighborhoods you've driven through, when you walk through them, you pop in a restaurant or a bar. I made a point to go to the pastime where Give Me Three Steps is supposedly about. And so things like that have been pieces to this. But so that's, I think it's more, mostly the main goal is just to know my city better, to have fun with it. But I also wanted to highlight this. And, you know, this report came out a week or two ago. And again and again and again, we are ranked as one of the worst cities in America.
We are the sixth deadliest metro area for pedestrians in the United States. Lots of other Florida cities in the top 10. So Florida cities are just not built for anything but the car. The study says that roads are still being designed without pedestrians in mind, and also bicyclists. Our streets are made to prioritize high speeds for cars over safety for everyone.
That's true. I mean, it's an infrastructural issue. We're not building the curbs that we need. We're not putting the sidewalks back from the road in a lot of cases. I mean, some of the busiest roads that you all, where you also see a lot of pedestrians, like Beach Boulevard or Atlantic, you'll find areas where there's just this little patch of grass separating the sidewalk from the road, and you'll have stretches of road with miles between crosswalks. And, you know, people really aren't that inclined to walk 2 miles just to go across the street and then to walk back another mile to get to their destination, so they're going to play Frogger with traffic.
Well, I'll give you a prime example this week. It's an intersection I got to last week. I finished at Beach Road Chicken and was walking back to my walking back to my car, which was at Southern Grounds in San Marco. I'd walked with the San Marco train that week, and Melissa came up.
How many times did it block you?
Yes. But anyway, so it was about more than a half mile on Atlantic to the next intersection. I thought, I'll do the right thing, the safe thing. I'll walk to that intersection, hit the button, and wait. And I waited and waited and waited. And it was about 6 or 7 minutes before the light changes, which feels like forever. But I thought, I got here when it was already at this. How long would I have to wait? So I did this again, and it was more than 10 minutes. And then to cross 7 lanes of traffic It was about 15 seconds.
Yeah, you take your life in your hands when you try to cross.
So what if somebody's gonna? If you're asking somebody to wait 15 minutes for a light to change, what are they gonna do?
They're not gonna wait.
Nope. They're gonna wait until there's a gap in the traffic
and then run across.
And the speed limit right there is 40 miles per hour. Cars are not going 40 miles an hour.
Do you remember a few years ago down in Mandarin? I think it was along San Jose Boulevard. Orthodox Jewish community in that area. Mm. On the Sabbath, they are forbidden by their faith from driving a car or using electricity. They were trying to walk to their temple, I believe. And yes, as Mark points out, when you press the button at a lot of intersections, you have 30 seconds or less to cross, which is crazy because everything is designed for the convenience of the drivers, not the pedestrians. Mm-hmm. There was a fatality among this group of Orthodox Jews simply due to our built design.
It goes to the old adage, you know, the chicken or the egg, right? You look at that intersection you're talking about, and if you sat there and watched how many people actually walked through that intersection versus how many people drove through that intersection, I would wager that it would be 500-1. Mm-hmm. So you know, is the cost to transform the city that way worth that? And then in order for it to be worth that, you have to transform the mindset of the people involved. So do you really want to be walking around in 95 degree heat and 100% humidity in the middle of August without the AC in your car? You know, so
although arguably more people would walk if it was safer and if it was more, you know,
exactly,
if you felt secure doing
it. Exactly.
I lived out at the beach, and so I rode my beach cruiser around like everybody does at the beach. It was part of my lifestyle. I would shop in this thing and all, you know, I was like, I rode my bike. I moved to the south side and I continued riding my bike until I saw someone get hit by a car right in front of me on Beach Boulevard, and they were illegally on the sidewalk. I will concede that. But after that, I was like, it's not worth taking my life into my own hands to save some petroleum and get a little exercise to go get a few groceries.
Give us a call as we talk about Jacksonville being named the sixth deadliest city in America for pedestrians. And we want to hear from bicyclists, too, people that use public transit. Give us a call, 549-2937. You know, the national movement to address this is known as Complete Streets, Sheldon. Mm-hmm. Sheldon, it's designed, it's a policy and design approach that requires streets to accommodate everyone safely, not just cars, but also pedestrians, bicyclists, motorists, and transit riders. Which we've seen a little bit of that in Jacksonville from JTA, we're not anywhere near where we need to be.
Well, they're making an effort, but we've spent millions and millions of dollars on road construction where these issues haven't come into play. And a cynic would say, well, that's what you get when you have a city run by car dealers and gas station owners and concrete firms. I don't think it's necessarily a malicious sort of thing. You know, I live out in Riverside, and I spend a lot of time downtown. So I do a lot of walking at night. And a key factor in all of this, besides the issues with infrastructure, is that our city has really terrible absent-minded drivers. We've had a lot of bicyclists and pedestrians hit in this city, but let's not forget that a small portion of that at least was deliberate. There are people who accelerate. There are people who will lean on the horn when they, you know, road
rage. It's a culture thing. As a culture, like if you go to a European city, everyone is so mindful of all the bicyclists. We just don't have that culture here in America in the same way. You know,
not here. They do in other cities. I mean,
city.
You go to Portland and it's a higher priority. But again, it's the mindset of the folks who live there, too. And it's just the way it is.
Lots of calls. Bubba is in Hanna Park. Sorry, Mark. I'll get right to you in a second. Bubba in Hanna Park. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I wanted to make a comment, about pedestrians and everything. I agree with what you guys are saying about there needs to be a big infrastructure change. But also, like, I stopped walking around and riding my bicycle mainly because I almost got killed. And I've had friends that got killed on, riding their bikes around. And I think that's a big issue. And maybe the next mayor could also put, like, bringing it back to that subject, bring that up in their race, leadership in that area, because I think that's a big issue in Jacksonville.
Okay, Bubba.
And I also wanted to say hey to Shelton, and I'm glad that you're on.
All right. Thank you. Okay, thanks for that. Mark Woods.
I was just going to say, it's not just a safety issue, saving lives. You know, you mentioned some other cities. It is the, and not just the overall physical health of a city. I think it's about the economic health of a city, too. I think we talk about, you know, wanting to have a young population, a vibrant. People want to move to cities that are walkable, that they can get out and do things. You know, so we've there, and you know, I've tried to also in this walk highlight places that are pretty amazing. You know, now that we have the new South Bank Riverwalk, that mm-hmm. is, we need to do more with it. But it's a pretty our downtown where we can walk is pretty spectacular.
There are cities around the country that would love to have the natural resources that our city has for that kind of thing. You just mentioned, I mean, how many miles of riverfront could we have? Yep.
Right.
And there are cities out there who have done just that, and it's spectacular.
We have a long history of massively underutilizing our wonderful natural amenities. Mm. It's true. Greta at the beaches. Hi, Greta. How are you?
Hi, doing well.
Go ahead.
My daughter got hit by a car, and she was walking in around in San Marco, and then I also had a friend that was killed on a bicycle. And I thought the last caller was right in saying the infrastructure has to change. We should, instead of building more roads and highways, build little cities within the city where they have a hospital and a church and sidewalks and places to work so that people don't have to drive to an area where they can walk or ride a bike. They just walk there.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, it's been hard since my daughter got hit by a car.
I'm so sorry. How badly was she injured?
It was pretty bad. But, you know, the last caller was saying there's people that don't look where they're going when they're driving. They just kind of drive, and that's what happened.
I'm so sorry, Greta. Lots of calls, people wanting to share their stories about this. Tom is at the beaches. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I ride a motorcycle, and, man, the aggressive driving problem, and it's huge. And, it, you know, the law enforcement is a needle in a haystack issue where, you know, you've got 50, 60 people speeding and nobody gets pulled over. And, I mean, it's just the aggressive driving, I feel like, is the problem. I really do. It's pedestrians, it's bicyclists, it's motorcyclists, it's people in cars are aggressively driving. And I'm not sure if anything can be done about it.
Right. How do you change people's behavior? That's a tough one.
That is a tough one.
I think Dan Scanlon in his transportation column wrote how JSO is going to, I think it's a grant, is going to devote, I think, $30,000 or whatever to enforcement to try and affect this. But I feel like often that seems to be our answer. We're going to give out, and we're going to try and enforce instead of building, you know, talking about the infrastructure. We don't do those things very well. And along those lines, I hope the enforcement isn't just, you know, punitive to pedestrians and cyclists, that there are irresponsible pedestrians and cyclists. But I hope when they talk about enforcing these danger spots, and I'm sure that's what they mean, it also is to the aggressive drivers, the people speeding through red lights. And, you know, an issue I've had, I'll wait and wait and wait for that green light to cross, and then there's a car that's going to turn. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have the right of way. I've waited all
sure.
this time, and yeah. somebody gets
and they're
mad.
They're stopping at the red light.
Somebody yeah. gets mad that I'm going to walk out in that crosswalk. How
and
dare
they,
you?
And they could kill you and not the other way around.
Right.
You have to let them go.
So I get frustrated by things like that.
Here's another tweet. Atlanta has a culture of crosswalks and pedestrian right of way. Perhaps we need a public service campaign in Duval to change drivers' perspective. That's a good point. Good idea. So many calls on this. We'll take a few more calls. Brian in Avondale. Hi, Brian. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. And hey, I just wanted to thank you all very much for bringing this up this morning. This is very important to me and my family. I have a quick comment and a quick question. My comment is when we head over to the parks, we live in Riverside, Avondale. You know, there's numerous parks that we can walk to, bike to, you know, but sometimes we're waiting at a two-lane street for 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes just to get, you know, from one side of the street to the other. You know, this is around the Boone Park area. And my question is, and I've heard this on your show before, how do we get to, you know, a point where we can get these pedestrian signs up and get these streetlights up for the pedestrians?
Yeah, I think that's an important question, Brian. Thanks for that. That's an something for the FDOT and JTA agencies to work on.
There are more of those going up. There's one, let's see, on University that just went up. But we do need more of those. And then also going back to, you said the awareness. I was up in I guess it was New Hampshire, and they have the same kind of signs that, you know, state law must stop here. And I got to that, and I, of course, didn't just walk out in the, because I'm used to people just blow by that, even though it's state law. And sure enough, everybody pulled up, and they, yeah. You're a pedestrian there waiting to cross. They're going to stop and let you cross. Whereas here, we, for instance, in San Marco, there's signs are there, but I'm not going to just step out and assume that people are going to follow that state law. So that needs to, I don't know exactly how we change that.
Bobby on the north side. Go ahead, Bobby.
Yes, I want to give an opposing point of view as far as there are a lot of distracted pedestrians. I operate a commercial vehicle, and I don't know how many times I've been very slowly moving through an intersection, and the only thing that alerted me that the person was walking across the street in dark clothes was their face was lit up by their iPhone. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of distracted walking, and there is a lot of just bicyclists, you know, who they talk about, you know, sharing the road, but they blow through stop signs. They ride on the wrong side of the road. There is a lot of fault on both sides. There are distracted drivers. We see that all the time, again, in my job. But, you know, we all own a little bit of this problem, and we need to get that darn iPhone out of our face.
Thank you. Yeah, that goes in a lot of context.
Yeah. Distracts everybody.
Thanks,
from
Bobby.
A lot of things.
Yeah. I believe cities have actually made that a civil infraction for, like, walking through with your phone in your face. But although we do all bear some responsibility, pedestrians, bicyclists, and drivers, I would say that only the drivers are the ones that are at the wheel of a deadly weapon. I was trying to cross Riverside yesterday, just like you're saying, Mark. I was at a crosswalk, just waiting, and technically they're all supposed to stop for me. It must have been 50 cars before one finally stopped.
Right. People, be more considerate out there, I think is the message. Aaron in Mandarin. Go ahead, Aaron, you're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. I just want to say something about the PSAs on the utility boxes, like on the corners of roads. They're pretty ominous looking with how this, you know, the tire marks show running over a pedestrian or a bicyclist. And it just seems like that's the way that the city looks at it from, you know, you better watch out, you pedestrian, rather than, you know, hey, let's all play this game together. And it seems like their impetus is on getting cars around rather than moving people safely, because you would think that they would not make it look so ominous when you pull up to the next street light, notice that. And it just, it's not a good sign, like, cross at your own risk.
Right.
You shouldn't be out here, rather than giving people, you know, an honest easement.
Right.
I get the last guy's caller about people walking on the wrong side, but, you know, there's bad drivers that don't use their blinkers. We could pull out all the stops, but, you know, I've never seen a bicycle kill a motorist.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
So
thank you, Aaron. Yeah, that's Aaron in Mandarin. Thank you.
So that exact intersection I described where I waited 15 minutes and then had less 15 seconds to stop. There's one of those there that says, if only I'd been looking out for cars, and it has a yellow kind of silhouette of a pedestrian with tire tracks over him, which it was infuriating to see that after I waited that long, had that short a time to cross an intersection.
Yeah.
And you're telling me, as a pedestrian, you need to do better, you know, or this could happen to you.
Right. Pedestrians, the law says pedestrians have the right of way.
But yeah,
technically.
His idea on the, and it also, there were other ones about wait, you know, wait. Hit the button. I did all those things, and it was still hard to cross this intersection.
Yeah. Terry on the south side. What are your thoughts, Terry? Good morning.
Hi there. Thank you for having me on the show. I've been cycling around Jacksonville for a long time, and one thing that I've noticed about the city is there's not a lot of through streets that are side streets that allow pedestrians and cyclists to go through. The building planning developers all tend to make these gated communities that have no way to get around them except going around where the traffic is busy. So that's where I think they should really change that thinking.
Thank you, Terry. That's a good point, too. And Eric in Riverside. Hi, Eric. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I think a lot of the conversation this morning has kind of danced around the issue that all of our roadways and transportation spaces are mixed spaces. That is that cars and bikes and pedestrians can travel them freely. I think Jacksonville needs to take cues from cities like St. Augustine and Savannah and build out more spaces where traffic is segregated so that until we have the culture change that's obviously very needed, that we can have spaces where pedestrians and cyclists can move freely and safely and cars aren't interrupted. And I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you for that, Eric. We have an email about that saying something similar. It's from Stephen at Tocnell Planning Services. And he writes, the city council established a context-sensitive streets standards committee in 2013. They were tasked to upgrade the roadway design standards to better provide for pedestrian and bike safety. They recommended legislation to upgrade our roadway design standards in 2017, but most of those standards have not yet been enacted. Good information there.
A couple quick things. I know JTA is talking about, they have big plans for the autonomous vehicles and building a ramp from the Skyway down to Bay Street. And part of those plans do include dedicated bike lanes, I believe. So, there are efforts to transform the core of downtown to do exactly what we're all talking about here, making it more pedestrian and bike friendly. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we're also talking about the larger issue that we are just the largest city by landmass.
That's right.
And it is going to be impossible to address this at every corner of this city, frankly. But you can at least start with the core.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, this has been something that the citizens have been talking about for a long time, especially the bicycle community. The bicycle community has lost many, many of their people in the last few years because of the interactions with vehicles. Mark's series about walking around Jacksonville, I think, is really one of the coolest things like I've ever read in this city, and it's like well worth looking at. And what you've done just in the last couple of days, it's brought this issue to the
forefront.
Yeah, more than ever before.
Just search the hashtag MarkWalksJax for more. And finally, it's our look at the strange, bizarre, and just plain ridiculous from the week around Florida. Luckily, never a shortage of material. Here it is for you right now, only in Florida. And guys, how about this one? Only in Florida does a politician resign following allegations she liked to lick her colleagues' faces. I do that all the time.
They're so tasty.
The problem is, City Commissioner Nancy Oakley of Madeira Beach allegedly had a habit of licking men that she was attracted to or thought she had authority over. She denied any inappropriate behavior, but she has been ousted after several of her colleagues offered sworn testimony saying that they had witnessed Oakley licking male colleagues' faces in public without their consent. Men say, me too.
Oh, right.
What the heck is going on in Madeira Beach?
I mean, my dog shows affection that way, I guess.
Where is Lyndon Johnson when we need him?
Thank you, Shelton Hall, Claire Gofarth, Mark Woods, and John Bachman. Guys, so good to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks,
you.
Melissa.
And up next, the Jacksonville mom and teacher whose painting of a bird sparked a worldwide viral sensation. We'll explain next here on First Coast Connect. Stay with us.
Comcast Business, providing a gig speed network that gets business done. Comcast Business, beyond fast. More at comcastbusiness.com.
Wayne Hogan of the Terrell Hogan Law Firm.
I'm Wayne Hogan. You don't let employees drive drunk, but talking on the phone creates the same risk. Learn about distracted driving presentations for the workforce.
Learn more at waynehogan.law.
In Mexico City, being in the music business means being in the streaming business.
Digital music right now is the thing. Like, you have to be there or you're like a ghost on the industry, you know?
I'm Kai Rizdal, digital music in Spotify's biggest market. Next time on Marketplace. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm John Dankosky. This month, the Grand Canyon celebrates 100 years as a national park. This week on Science Friday, how people explore and understand the canyon through maps.
The tools that allow us to see the Grand Canyon in its entirety are maps themselves.
Plus, a push of a button can order us dinner, turn on the lights, and even find us a date. How has the button changed the way we interact with technology? That's on Science Friday from WNYC Studios.
Friday at 3 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Venezuela's President Maduro warns Washington not to repeat the mistakes of Vietnam in Latin America. The European Council's president says whoever came up with the disastrous Brexit deserves, in his words, a special place in hell. And more than a billion people welcomed the Year of the Pig. The Friday News Roundup, next time on 1A.
Today at 11 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, right now we want to tell you the amazing story of a local woman who recently became an internet celebrity after a photo that her son took of her went viral. And it influenced artists around the world and set off a chain reaction of this really long online meme, even a museum exhibit in the process. Local teacher Cindy Decker started all this off when she made an amateur oil painting of an egret. Nice painting. Then her 18-year-old son, Matthew, posted a photo of his mom holding the painting. He posted it on the social media site Reddit, and the caption read, "My mom painted this and said no one would like it. It's her second painting." Well, people liked it. More than 24,000 people upvoted the image within just a few hours. But the Decker family could never have predicted the chain reaction of hilarious and even masterful paintings that followed on this. Here's what happened next. The next day, an artist in Sweden named Christopher Zetterstrand, who's known for his paintings in the video game Minecraft. Well, he saw the posting on Reddit, and he decided to paint Matthew's photo of his mother holding her painting, right? Can you picture that? The Swedish guy posted on Reddit a photo of himself holding his painting with the caption, "I painted somebody's mom." Well, do you see where this is going? Then a journalism student in Canada painted a picture of Zetterstrand holding his painting, which was a painting of someone else holding a painting, and she posted her photo. Well, you know where I'm going with this. The meme really took off with layer upon layer upon layer of paintings of the painting of the painting appearing all over the world. Millions of people have seen this and commented. A museum exhibit on this is even in the works. This all started right here in Jacksonville. I spoke about it with Cindy and Matthew Decker about how this whole crazy story began. Take a listen. Cindy, let's start with you. Tell me about the painting first off.
Well, I did it at Painting with a Twist in Fruit Cove and came home. And I was happy with my painting, but wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it. Figured it'd end up in a closet. And Matthew was so impressed, he thought I could sell it. And I told him there's no way. And said no one would buy this. So he decided to prove me wrong, and he said, "Hold it up, I want a picture." And I honestly thought he was putting it on Snapchat to show his friends, and I know a lot of his friends, so, you know, wasn't too worried about it. And he came back later and said, "You know, Mom, this many people liked it. I think 122 or 400, I can't even remember now." And I'm like, "What? You have that many friends on Snapchat?" But he's a teenager, so he probably does. And he goes, "No, I put it on Reddit." And then I was like, "Oh, no, because I don't really know what Reddit is. I just know my face was there. I figured people were going to be mean." And by the time I went to bed, which was just a couple hours later, it was like up at 24,000 upvotes.
And that's pretty good.
That's huge. So I was just happy with that. And most of the comments were so nice. And, you know, was kind of overjoyed with that. And up the next day to like 70,000. And pretty much went through the whole afternoon kind of on cloud nine with just that.
Even that alone was great. But then, Matthew, can you explain what happened next?
So I get home from work the next day,
and I had like 200 messages, and the guy in Sweden decided to paint the picture. And then it kept going, and more people kept painting it, and I was just kind of blown away by it all. I was like, I never saw this one coming at all.
Right, all over the world. So somebody painted a picture of them holding the painting of your mom, and then someone else painted a picture of themselves holding that picture, and it became almost like a funhouse mirror,
right?
Just yeah. Reverberating all over the world. There's more about this on our website, so people can see exactly what we're talking about. But as it grew and grew, it really became just the feel-good story of the internet, Cindy. People just were so excited about this. Why do you think that is?
I honestly don't know. I don't think it's the power of my bird. I think it was just that. It was fun. It was cool. It was, you know, for artists, I guess it was maybe a challenge. They wanted to get in on it, you know. I think it was just that. It was fun.
Now, you just received the first painting of the photo of you holding the painting. Is that right?
Correct.
So it kind of came full circle, I guess?
That's what I've heard. That's what people were saying. It kind of came full circle. There's been some people who's like, oh, I was hoping she would paint everybody holding the painting. I'm like, no, that's way beyond my artistic ability. I mean, yeah, so I don't feel like I deserve a lot of the credit. I really think that, you know, this crazy journey that I've been on, it was really because of that first painting that got painted from the guy in Sweden. I think, you know, he's the one that kind of started this, and it just snowballed into this wonderful journey.
Now you can learn all about Cindy and Matthew Decker and their amazing painting and more about this story on our website with some cool pictures of the painting and the painting of the painting. It's at wjctnews.org. Thanks for listening. And thanks to our producer, Heather Schatz, and our director, Michelle Corum. I'm Melissa Ross, and 1A is up next. Make sure to catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8, and also tune in today at noon for the Florida Roundup, our statewide live call-in show looking at the biggest stories all across the state this week. We'll be right back here again, meantime, at 9 a.m. Monday morning. Have a great Friday.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.